This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on September 1st, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Commission will come to order for open meeting of Thursday, September 1st. The first item on our agenda is the correction and approval of minutes. Vice Chair Hunter, do we have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move to approve agenda document number 11-51, minutes for the open session held on August 4th, 2011.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. The next item on our agenda is a draft advisory opinion. First, I believe we have some late submitted documents. Vice Chair, do you have a motion, please?
Yes, I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of agenda document numbers 11-48, 11-48A, 11-50, and 11-52. Thanks.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you. The draft advisory opinion 2011-15 is on behalf of requester Abdul Karim Hassan. Ms. Waldstreicher from the Office of General Counsel will present this advisory opinion to us. Please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1148 and 1148A are three alternative drafts that respond to an advisory opinion request submitted by Abdul Hassan. Mr. Hassan is a naturalized U.S. citizen who has publicly declared his candidacy for president in 2012. He indicates that he satisfies all constitutional requirements for the office of the presidency, except for the requirement that the president be a natural-born citizen of the United States. The request asks whether Mr. Hassan may be considered a candidate and a person under the act, as well as whether his status as a naturalized citizen makes him ineligible to receive public matching funds under the Matching Funds Act. The request further asks whether Mr. Hassan would violate Section 441HB's prohibition on fraudulent misrepresentation by soliciting contributions, and whether he is subject to the Act's provisions regarding expenditures, contributions, record keeping, and reporting. All three drafts conclude that Mr. Hassan is a person under the Act's definition, and that although he is not yet a candidate under the Act, he will become one when he has either received more than $5,000 in contributions or made more than $5,000 in expenditures. All three drafts also conclude that Mr. Hassan would not violate Section 441HB by soliciting contributions, and that the Act's provisions regarding expenditures, contributions, record keeping, and reporting apply to him as they do to all candidates. The drafts differ in their responses to question two. Draft A and Draft C conclude that Mr. Hassan will not be eligible to receive public matching funds. Draft B concludes that the question of Mr. Hassan's eligibility to receive matching funds is at this point hypothetical and therefore not appropriate for an advisory opinion. We have received 13 comments and one ex parte communication on the drafts. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Council. Is there a discussion from commissioners or questions for Council? Commissioner Walther?
I have concerns over approving the opinion as it stands. And I recognize the situation that is awkward in the sense that what we find ourselves in is generally giving a green light to someone to raise money when there's at present clearly no right to hold that office. And so I think we're struggling with why we're doing that, and the finding that the language says if you seek the office, I think most of us assumed that that was you're seeking an office you could hold. We're now interpreting it to say it's okay if you're seeking an office that you can't legally hold, and therefore we'll call you a candidate even though you can never legally hold the office as we understand the law right now. So I'm reluctant to go down that road, and I wonder what we would do if we were, and I've gone back and forth on this, if we were presented with a statement of candidacy from somebody who clearly couldn't ever hold office, and would we just say fine and have them report? I think it's a tough situation to always think we're going to give a green light to that situation. We have a case right now where this gentleman is before the Second Circuit on an issue that would decide this to the extent it needs it. And the court at present has found that he doesn't have standing at this point to go any further, and I'm assuming that that court will still, you know, it'll run its course at some point. And then at that point, we might have some guidance. I question whether we should go ahead and answer the question today when there's a pending court proceeding that would resolve an issue that they were confronted with now. So I'm reluctant to proceed to answer the question without giving cognizance of the fact that that court case is before us. And I have another issue that bothers me here, and it's, I would agree, I agree with the decisions that this court, you know, this draft C presents, except I wonder if it's wise for us to go down that road at this time. And I see our opinion that, yes, it's not a violation of 441HB, but on the other hand, if we say that, we don't really point out that that particular statute doesn't really relate to the situation here, and it gives the potential for a green light for somebody to waive this opinion and say what I'm doing is legal. Hey, read this, it's from the FEC, when in fact to accept money under false pretenses is illegal in many jurisdictions. And if someone is raising money to run for an office that that person cannot legally hold, and in my opinion has a very, very speculative chance of ever being able to hold, unless the Supreme Court changes its, you know, its interpretation of the Constitution. We don't, in this opinion, point out that the implications of that are not. One cannot use this as a defense against these wrongful use of various methods of solicitation. Unless this person is to say, hey, I can never hold office, will you just give me the money and the hope that I can change the Supreme Court opinion? Maybe so, but I don't see that as being likely here, and I think our opinion should take some very careful steps to point out that we can't, no one should construe our opinion to suggest that it's okay to take money under false pretenses or under pretenses that might even remotely suggest that this person could ever hold the office for which he's seeking money. So this is a tough... I've thought about voting for the opinion and adding these thoughts, but I think I'll just vote against it and suggest that it ought to be in the opinion.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. I share many of the same concerns that Commissioner Walter has raised, but I think on one question I come down a little bit differently. Going in reverse order, the question of whether this fellow can get matching funds, the answer to that I think is no. By having a commission, it denotes that there is some discretion and there is some ability to determine who actually qualifies and who doesn't. And if you read the case law on this, LaRouche was really the seminal plaintiff in these sorts of cases. At the end of the day, we do administer the program. And it's the sort of thing you take a look at. And I think the comments really capture the obvious answer to this. Every comment, and there's been more than usual, and they're not from the usual suspects. They're not from the lawyers in town or usual political committees. They're from what seem to be just rank-and-file citizens saying, essentially, you got to be kidding me that someone who's not born in the U.S. can get taxpayer money to run for president when he can't hold the office. That really captures it. The other issue, which is the one is he a candidate under FECA? That's a little bit trickier because FECA does not address whether or not you can actually hold the office that you seek. FECA is merely essentially a system that requires you to report money that you raise and imposes limits on money that you raise for federal office. Whether you can hold the federal office, that's another issue entirely. People, I think... need to remember, particularly the commenters, that the Federal Election Commission is, to a certain extent, misnamed. We don't administer federal elections. We're not a commission that decides who can be president. You know, we probably have all had this around election time every other year. Family members will say, man, you must really be busy. Well, we're really not around election time, right? The reports have been filed and that kind of thing. And then people think, oh, you know, you may have gotten this, Madam Chair, Minnesota. Oh, there's this recount. You must be real busy with this recount. No, we have nothing to do with that other than perhaps the financing of recounts, which that's even open to debate, depending who you are. You know, the commission, I think, has come up with a workable
solution. We have to answer the questions about recounts,
Right, but we just don't do that here. Nor do we decide whether someone's qualified for office, and that's President and House and Senate. You know, we don't decide if someone's running for the House whether or not they moved into the jurisdiction in time before they were sworn in to be a House member. We don't decide whether someone is old enough. And with president, I don't think anyone has empowered the FEC to decide whether or not someone's qualified to be president. One could imagine the six of us, us being the institutional us, not us personally, but just over the years, trying to decide whether or not someone was really born here for purposes of being president. You know, is the Panama Canal Zone part of the United States? I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but I'm not really the one empowered to decide that. So to address Commissioner Walther's concerns, very, very, very astute observations. I have the same concern in that we're going to issue an AO that says, yeah, under FECA, you're a candidate. If you file a report, we're going to accept the report, I suppose. It's going to go on the website. And if you take excessive contributions, you're going to get a request for additional information like any other candidate. And, you know, you may get real lucky and be audited. You may really appreciate being part of the Federal Election Campaign Act's jurisdiction. But none of this has anything to do with whether you're qualified to be president. This person, he admits quite candidly, he was not born in the U.S., therefore under the Constitution, is not qualified to be president. But the concern Commissioner Walther raises is a very critical concern, and I hope people who realize what we're doing here today hear this. This does not mean he can go and say, look, the FEC has said I'm a candidate, give me money, I'm official. That's not what we do here. We don't certify you as a candidate. That's what the states do. You go, and I have in front of me the New Hampshire, how you get on the ballot form, declaration of candidacy, I blank, that's for your name, swear under penalties of perjury that I am qualified to be a candidate for President of the United States pursuant to Article 2, Section 1, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution, which states, quote, no person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president, neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States, unquote, and a, you know, domicile and all that. And so I don't see him getting on the ballot in New Hampshire. Iowa, another state people talk about in presidential elections, same kind of thing. I swear or affirm that the information provided on this form is correct. I will be qualified to hold this office, and if I am elected, I will qualify by taking the oath of office. That has to be, again, under oath. It's an affidavit. Nevada, I pulled Nevada from my friend from Nevada. Same thing. You have to say the quote, that I will qualify for the office if elected there, too. So to be clear, the FEC doesn't trump all this. You can't get your FEC card and go and say, I'm on the ballot now in your state because the FEC says I can be president. No, we're not saying that. What we're saying is if you're trying to run, you're going to have to file a report and be subject to all the other bells and whistles that any other candidate has to be subject to. You know, I could imagine a kind of a humorous test case. You could say, well, gee, I can never be president, so I shouldn't be subject to the contribution limits. I cannot possibly be corrupted because I'll never actually be a public official. I'll never be president. This is kind of where the silliness can take you if you have more time on your hands than you know what to do with. But I want to be clear, just simply because we're saying the guy's a candidate for purposes of this agency does not make him a candidate for purposes of state ballot law, nor does it, I think, make him immune from any state laws regarding, for lack of a better word, fraud, the sort of things Commissioner Walther raised. You go, I'm a candidate, I can be president, the FEC says so. Would not surprise me if a state attorney general said, not so fast, not in my state. Lots of laws. Federal candidates run into this on all fronts. State laws on phone calls and fundraising solicitations and the whole cadre of things that come under the consumer protection umbrella and business torts and whatnot. You can't just go out and claim you're something you're not. You know, I would think long and hard if I were someone in this person's shoes about taking what is essentially close to a ministerial act. Meaning, yeah, if you raise more or spend more than $5,000 to run for office, you have to file reports with the FEC and turn that into something. It's not, because that's really what the word candidate means in FEC vernacular. It means you've raised some money or spent some money over a limit, and you have to file reports. So with that, I hear my colleague, Commissioner Walther, agree wholeheartedly, but the flip side, I think that once he does trigger the statute, I don't think we have the discretion to say, well, yeah, you're not a candidate, because I don't think our statute empowers us to go beyond what we're doing. So I can support, I think it's draft C, the latest draft. But I wanted to state that just so the public understands that the commission, I think we've all heard and all share the concern raised by the commenters. We're not handing out taxpayer money to a foreign national or any of that kind of stuff, and I think it's important to say that we are an agency of limited jurisdiction, and we only do what it is that we do, and we don't make someone a candidate essentially for real, meaning put them on the ballot and let them hold office and that kind of thing. Nor do I think anyone would really want a federal agency to decide that. It's just not the system that we have. The states still play and historically have always played a critical role in electing those who serve in the federal government. So, thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Words you don't hear very often. I agree with absolutely everything that Commissioner McGann said. I think we all share the sentiments of the commenters and Commissioner Walther and you know, sort of the common sense reaction that a lot of people have to this request. But for us, this is really all about what we're empowered to decide and what we're not empowered to decide. And I think also if we came to a different conclusion on question one, that would permit somebody to go out and claim to be raising funds for candidacy, and then he wouldn't have to do any reporting. It would be entirely below the radar screen. It would all be completely not transparent, and that doesn't seem like a very good result either. So there's sort of bad results all around, no matter how you come out on this one. But I think in terms of what we can and cannot are empowered to decide and what we're not empowered to decide, I think draft C probably comes to the best conclusions.
I will also be supporting draft C, although somewhat, I guess, reluctantly. I share many of Commissioner Walther's concerns, particularly the one about someone being able to go out and say the FEC has now said I'm a candidate. And I think what the draft actually says is the act does not prevent him from holding himself out as a candidate, because the statutory definition does not turn on a person's eligibility to be seated for the office he or she seeks, as Commissioner McGann has fully explored. And I think there's a reason for that. I think the drafters of the act didn't anticipate that anyone who was ineligible to be seated for an office would bother to run for office. So I think it's probably not an error in drafting as opposed to a logical consequence. Nobody would have thought that someone who is ineligible to be seated would go through the bother. And as Commissioner McGann points out, it's unlikely that given ballot requirements, he could even get on the ballot. So I am also concerned that this opinion may give this individual the ability to seek money from people without them knowing that he's ineligible to seek office. And I actually like Commissioner Walther's suggestion that we tell him he has to tell people he's ineligible for the office. I'm just not sure we have the power to do that. So I think that draft C reflects sort of the limits of our jurisdiction. The Act says has a definition of a candidate It does not prevent him from becoming a candidate, despite the fact that he would be ineligible for the office. So I'll support draft C, although I share the concerns of Commissioner Walther and for many of the reasons that Commissioner McGann stated, I think this is the appropriate decision for this commission. And to the extent that there may be civil fraud concerns, there are other jurisdictions who would have authority over those issues. Commissioner Walther.
Got a little more on this. At this point, and I agree with a lot of what everybody said, because I think the way you come down on the issues is not at all unreasonable. I think for me, it's I think the opinion should be, if we're going to go that direction, should definitely expand and elaborate on these issues more than it has. In this particular case, if we had a court opinion that says, listen, you cannot run for office, I don't know whether we should automatically say, fine, file your statement of candidacy and report with us. We have a case that this is unique. There's a case pending right now on the issue, and it seems to me it's premature to go down the road of saying fine when the court so far hasn't said that. But nevertheless, I know where the votes are, and I'm not saying it's unreasonable. I mean, I've had a tough time with this one myself. But I do think, for example, in our opinion, the statute that we were asked to say it's okay doesn't relate to what's happening here. So by saying it's okay, it does, I think, give an impression that somehow, we don't see a problem. And I'm worried about the way this can be read. And, I mean, clearly, as Commissioner McGann pointed out, the comments we got from people here were from people, we never hear from, just people that happen to be reading this stuff and say, hey, can't you guys read the Constitution? What the heck are you spending our time doing this for? Can't you know we can't ever run it? Can you ever really seriously take public money to run for an office he can't legally hold? And so... I think we need to be cognizant of how this can be misconstrued and that the opinion should probably elaborate more on that. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anything further? Just to be clear, the case I think you're referring to just does not involve the FEC. No. So it's not as if there's a pending matter that the FEC is involved in that we're deciding an advisory opinion on. As I understand it, there's a petition for rehearing pending with the Second Circuit, and obviously, should the court make some determination, the commission would abide by it, but as I understand it, it's not the same issue that's before us in this advisory opinion. And so, obviously, under the statute, we have an obligation to provide an answer to a requester of an advisory opinion. And as I think we've all expressed, there's some reluctance with this answer, but it is the answer that seems to be required by the statute. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to emphasize that point because nobody is... saying that it's fine, and nobody saying that it's okay for this guy to be going out and raising funds. What we're saying is we think under the Act there are limits to what we have jurisdiction over, and we just don't have the jurisdiction to decide anything more than whether he's raised or spent $5,000 for the purpose of influencing an election.
Commissioner McGann.
Couple follow-ups. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to echo that the case we're talking about is not against the FEC. I don't think it's not. So it's not as if we're deciding something in an AO that's already in another branch of the government. Two, speaking about that other branch, I mean there is case law. It talks about constitutional qualifications for federal office. I don't know of a case talking about presidential, maybe about being born here. Maybe there is. I just offhand have never had to litigate the issue. But there are other qualifiers, and my concern by sidestepping the issue, which the issue is really whether if the guy decides to raise money, does he have to file a report with the FEC, right? The answer, yes. If you raise money, you've just signed up for all this that's in all these books we have up here. when you look at the case law, it really does bring home that we do have to answer the question, because although what we have here is a unique qualifier, right? You have to be born in the United States to hold office of president. Case law has generally said that whether or not you're qualified is different than ballot access. Whether or not you're qualified for constitutional purposes is really at the time you take the oath of office. And even these ballot access forms that I read have been modified over the years to get closer to that. It used to be in certain states you had to certify you were a certain age and you lived in the jurisdiction and all that to get on the ballot to run for the House. Case law says that's not the case. You don't have to live in the state to run for the House. It's just when you win, before you get sworn in, you have to move in and be a resident of the state. You have to be old enough at that point, not when you sign up to run on the ballot. And if we don't go down the road of saying, gee, if you raise or spend a certain amount of money, you're a candidate, because we're not sure if you're qualified, that puts us in a situation that, again, although we're called the Federal Election Commission, that's just not our deal, because then we are deciding issues that really courts have decided and really are ultimately probably for the judicial branch to decide vis-a-vis what the Constitution means. If you have someone who claims, there was a case in Texas, and I was in full candor, I was involved in it, where candidate won a primary, moved out of the state, said, there's no way I'm moving back to the state anytime soon, so even if I win, I'm not going to be eligible to be in the House, therefore I'm going to take my name off the ballot, and the party wanted to fill the ballot line. The other party sued and said, you can't, because actually your nominee is not qualified or disqualified at this point. You're not going to know until they take the oath of office. Judge Sparks down in Texas wrote a very persuasive opinion that said, yeah, the plaintiff was absolutely right. Whether or not someone's a resident of the state, well, we don't care about that until it's time to be sworn in. Judge Sparks just recently made the news because he's the judge that just enjoined a Texas law on abortion that just got out there, and I just saw his name in the paper. Said, I remember Judge Sparks. It was a Bush appointee, although apparently a registered Democrat. Interesting guy, he left a local bar. He calls the balls and strikes, and I remember this opinion. He saw right through this move out of the state thing and said, no, Constitution only kicks in when you're sworn in. And I thought of that case, and I looked at some other cases, and that tends to be how the federal courts come down, is the qualification is something that is different from running. It does put us in a weird spot. Someone's running for an office that I think everyone knows he's not going to be able to hold, because the president does have that unique qualifier. But if we get into case law, I think to me the case law requires us to answer the question and say, yeah, you have to file a report to the extent, without getting ahead of everyone else, to Commissioner Walther, if there's some language we could add, a footnote or perhaps acknowledging a pending case or that kind of thing to give you some more comfort, I'm happy to do that. But my sense is that's not a necessary thing to resolve the AO. But, I don't like the answer either, but I'm going to vote for it because I think I have to. And if there's a way we can all join hands and jump over the precipice together, I'm more than happy to do that. And with that, I yield back. And maybe there's no way to do that, but if there is, I think there's some appetite to do something along those lines, even just to drop, the case, or is a different issue, or we're not answering the questions beyond our jurisdiction, or something to that point. Whatever may help you get there. I think, at least for me, more than happy to put that in.
Commissioner Walther.
Yeah, I can warm up to that. I think, let me point out, though, that this particular case, the Court of Appeals has said, the district court determined that the complaint failed to state a plausible claim to relief and therefore dismissed the complaint. And that was under Federal Rule 12b, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. It has directly the issue before any court that would have to, the federal court, to decide whether or not this person could ever sit as president. And then the Second Circuit appealed, concurred, in addition to having lack of standing, affirmed the decision. So we do have a district court decision. I'd warm up to that if you wanted to, just to give reference to the fact that there's a pending case, you know, dealing with the issue. But I would also suggest that we add a sentence or two toward the end that clarifies, if the case is any question, that our opinion does not inoculate people from claims for potential claims of accepting money under circumstances that are misleading.
If I might, just to make sure we're all clear, the case that were that Commissioner Walter is talking about, it was a claim for declaratory relief that the 14th Amendment of the Constitution trumps the natural born provision of the Constitution. So obviously, I think as Commissioner Walter or Commissioner McGinnis said, that is not an issue that this body could decide in any way, shape, or form. As Commissioner Walther indicated, the Second Circuit panel affirmed, the district court dismissed, the Second Circuit affirmed on grounds of standing. There's now a petition for rehearing. I don't have any opposition to noting that this case is out there. It's the same, the requester is the same as the plaintiff, but I don't think it has any bearing on what we decide under the FECA. These are constitutional claims. Whether the 14th Amendment trumps that provision in the Constitution is something that I guess if I envision that if it were to be decided by a court, it might be decided by the Supreme Court, and ultimately not by lower courts. So, as I said, I don't have any issue with identifying the fact that this case is out there, but I don't think that it has any bearing on the FECA. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also would be happy to consider any language that my colleague would care to suggest. But I do want to point out, and this is mentioned in a footnote, that the Act does not contain separate definitions for candidates for different federal offices. There's an overall definition of what a candidate is, and obviously there are different qualifications, different eligibility standards under the Constitution for House and Senate members as opposed to the President. A naturalized citizen can hold other offices in the United States. I'm thinking of governors at the moment. Arnold Schwarzenegger springs to mind, but and obviously he's not in the federal system. But you know, there are naturalized citizens who can be in the Senate and in the House. The fact that the Act doesn't distinguish in its definition of candidate, I think, is another indication that Congress did not intend us to be the arbiters of who meets the constitutional eligibility qualifications for president. But as I said, I'm always happy to consider language from my colleagues that would address an issue of concern that they have.
If I could ask counsel a question on timing in this AO, when is our 60-day deadline? Does September 5th sound accurate?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. I'll ask my colleagues if there's a preference to try to resolve. We have only a few days to try to resolve this. I'm happy to consider additional language. Obviously, since there was a new draft this morning, we have been considering additional language right up until fairly early before the meeting. So, Commissioner McGinnis.
I can support what's before us today. I threw it out as because I sense perhaps there was an opportunity of having unanimous opinion. I can go either way because of the timing. But you know, the offer remains open. That's really, if Commissioner Walther feels he can at the end of the day support something, then maybe it's worth taking a little time. If he thinks that the issue is in the courts or is something that is another branch of the government's deal, just to throw out there, I mean, I'm sure the U.S. House probably thinks they're going to have a say in whether somebody can be president. I mean, if you actually read the whole Constitution there, it's kind of a complicated thing how you get to be president. and every branch seems to think they have a say. But I can go either way. So it's up to you, Madam Chair, because of the timing. But whichever way you want to go, I'm fine.
Commissioner Walther?
Well, I'm willing to give a shot at some language, and maybe by the end of the day, see if that works. If it doesn't, then you've got the votes, so go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so we will not take a vote on this matter today. We have a few days to resolve this matter before our 60-day window runs. Thank you, Council, for your work on this matter. We'll move on to the next item on our agenda, which is Draft Advisory Opinion 2011-17, Giffords for Congress. Good morning, Ms. Sellinghoff. Please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly. Good morning, Commissioners. You have for consideration Agenda Document 11-50, a draft advisory opinion that responds to a request submitted by Giffords for Congress. The committee asks whether it may use campaign funds to pay the costs of enhanced security at Representative Gabrielle Giffords' family home. The draft concludes that the committee may use campaign funds to pay these costs because these expenses would not exist irrespective of Representative Giffords' duties as a federal office holder or as a candidate, and these costs would not constitute personal use under the Act or Commission regulations. The Commission received one comment on the request. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Council. Is there any discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only comment I want to make is, first of all, I'm sure we all hope that the alarm is never triggered. This was perhaps the easiest request that we've gotten in the last 3 years, and I think the only question that I heard anybody ask was how fast can we answer it? Not only are the circumstances compelling, but there's plain precedent in previous AOs for the answer. It was really just a cut and paste of an answer we gave to another member of Congress. And I just wanted to point out that the statute requires that we put requests out for public comment for 10 days. And if not for that statutory requirement, I think we probably could have answered this one in about 24 hours.
Any further discussion? Motion? Vice Chair Hunter.
Yes, I move approval of agenda document number 11-50.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Council. The next item on our agenda is a draft interpretive rule on when certain independent expenditures are publicly disseminated for reporting purposes. This had its genesis in our discussions on the UAPEC audit, which is actually the following agenda item. One of the issues that audit raised had to do with determining the dissemination date for certain types of independent expenditures, like T-shirts or yard signs. And while the issue is resolved for purposes of the audit, we thought an interpretive rule might be a useful way to provide some who encounter this issue with some guidance going forward. Agenda document 11-52 represents some initial work on this topic and is in a draft stage so that we might seek some comment from the public. I want to thank members of the General Counsel staff, including Ms. Helmsley, Mr. Lutz, and Ms. Rothstein, for their work in helping us prepare this draft. We made this draft available today so that any interested parties could share comments on the draft with the Commission in advance of our consideration of this document later this month. As the document notes, we're asking comments by September 19th. The Commission will then consider those comments and this topic at our September 22nd meeting. So I don't want to preclude any other discussion by my colleagues, but we did want to provide this, get this document out today for public comment in advance of our next agenda item. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out that the reason this comes up is that what we're talking about are things like hats and handbills and T-shirts, things that inherently get personally distributed. And when this doesn't affect things like publication dates for it's easy when somebody puts out a newspaper ad or broadcasts an ad on cable to figure out when the ad was distributed or disseminated. It's pretty clear cut. But when items get delivered to a warehouse and then they get handed out, maybe they get handed out in stages, then it becomes a lot more complicated to figure out what is the precise date that should be used for reporting purposes. So we're trying to add a little bit of clarity to that issue, but I wouldn't want anybody to think that in adding perhaps some clarity on when hats are handed out. I don't want us to be muddying the waters on when a broadcast ad is run or when a newspaper ad is run, because those things are completely clear and easy to determine.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. I agree with all that. Just want to say.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
There's a lot of agreement today.
A lot of agreement today. As was already mentioned, this issue arose in the context of actually the next item on the agenda, which was an audit of a union, and some of us had some trouble with what was going on there because, you know, I learned that unions print up their signs and then ship them to the locals and then sort of hand the stuff out piecemeal, but they weren't particularly sure when stuff was handed out publicly. So when it came time to file independent expenditure reports, they sort of did the shoulder shrug and said, beats me. We didn't know when to file. And that made some sense to me because, well, it's not the sort of thing that the rule itself really spoke to with any sort of detail. At the time of the rulemaking, the concern was on TV ads and mail pieces and newspaper ads and the things that are the more traditional. And yeah, believe it or not, if you print up enough T-shirts or enough yard signs, that could be an independent expenditure that might trigger a reporting obligation. And now, post-CU, corporations and unions may hand this stuff out to the public, which is going to perhaps trigger, you know, EC reporting, or at least more questions as to what do we do now? Because now we're having more things go public, so there might be more people doing this kind of thing that didn't have to worry about it before. It is out for comment. We're going to put it out for comment, which I think is important because what we don't want to do is just do something and realize we missed something obvious. But I do want to note that this is not just limited to labor unions. I would have been fine with something that applied specifically to unions. The commission has done that in the past, and how they report various things. I think they're their own creature. And I think the law needs to allow different sorts of folks who participate in politics to do their thing without violating the statute. And I think unions are their own sort of creature. But this does apply to other political committees. And for me, I'm concerned, and I think this doesn't run afoul of anything that the parties do, but I would be curious if the parties think there is an issue, because parties do independent expenditures as well. So this doesn't just apply to unions, this applies to other people, and of course the independent groups that may be doing whatever they're doing, grassroots activities, they may want to weigh in as well to make sure that we're not, by providing clarity to a situation that came up in the context of a union, inadvertently causing problems for others, because this is supposed to help. It's not supposed to create any sort of loopholes or any sort of excuse for not reporting. It's just to allow people to come up with a date certain so that they know that when they file the report or when the clock begins to run as to when they're going to file a report. And ultimately, once things go public, you have to file a report, even under, I think, this draft. So this really moves the date up sooner, if that's easier for the filers, because they're just not sure if they've handed out enough T-shirts to trigger, you know, the monetary threshold or whatnot. That's the intent, is just to simplify for people that already have to file reports. We just want to make sure we don't make it more complicated or by trying to be helpful end up being hurtful. So hopefully people file comments. I'm encouraging people to do so, even if it's a simple looks good to me, that I think would help us all when we hopefully move this in the next meeting.
Anything further? Thank you, Council, for your assistance on this project. The next item on our agenda is the proposed final audit report on the United Association Political Education Committee, AO9-27. There's been a question as to whether this document needs any votes to put up for public comment. It's my understanding that it has been made blue. It is available for public comment. We will, I assume, we can put it in the Weekly Digest so that it is available for public comment. If there's procedurally, if there's anything further we need to do, but it's my understanding that this is now, this as it's been made blue as an agenda document, is available for public comment, and we can certainly find some way to highlight it on the website if that would satisfy people. Commissioner McGann?
It's not a rulemaking. It's a interpretation of an existing rule. If we don't have to formally vote, that's fine. We're just asking the question to make sure.
Yeah.
And if it's out there and people
it's
can comment on it.
It's my understanding, and I'll look at Ms. Smith to tell me if there's anything else we need to do. Thank you.
Okay. I just want someone to come back later and say, this doesn't really count because it wasn't. All right. Thank you.
Maybe we can consider it's without objection, since I don't hear anybody objecting.
The next item is the audit report on Agenda Document 1142, Audit A09-27. Ms. Moss, Ms. Northern, please proceed when ready.
Good morning, Commissioners. Before the Commission is the proposed final audit report on the United Association Political Education Committee. The report contains three findings. First finding addresses contributions to candidates and political committees. The second finding addresses reporting of independent expenditures and 24-40-hour notices. Third finding concerns disclosure transfers. We received edits from Commissioner Weintraub, and we're going to make those edits to this report as well as the following report, which is the final audit report of the Commission.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so the public knows what those mysterious edits are, they're very small on page 5 of the report at the end of the second paragraph. I just wanted to make sure that we were characterizing the comments of the union, the UAPEX legal counsel as closely as tracking his comments as closely as possible to what he actually said to our auditors. So I have suggested after discussing this with them that in the last line where it says comply more fully, that it would we should instead say assist in complying, because that's what he said. And also on page 8, the last sentence before finding 3, I'm suggesting that we just track the language of the cert when we last voted on this on June 15th and substitute for the last sentence before finding 3 on page 8, substitute this sentence: the Commission intends to consider these issues with respect to independent expenditure reporting and make a public statement regarding these issues, period. And that would also address the fact that the way it's written now, it talks about a policy statement. We just put out an interpretive rule, so it would be more in line with what we actually are doing.
Is there any discussion? Is there a motion? Vice Chair Hunter?
Yes, I move approval of agenda document number 11-42. With the changes as described by Commissioner Weintraub.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Ms. Moss and Ms. Northern. Mr. Palmer, are there any management or administrative matters for the Commission?
There are none.
Thank you. Is there anything further? This meeting is adjourned.